Hi, welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. I'm Chris Lucian, and I'm here with my co-host, Austin Chadwick. And today we have Julie Lerman with us to talk about mobbing, refactoring, and domain-driven design. So this will be a pretty interesting episode. You can stick with us. Julie, welcome to the show. Could you introduce yourself and then maybe talk about, maybe we'll just start going into mobbing and refactoring.
Sure. Thanks, Chris and Austin. So I'm a software coach. I've been a software developer for over 30 years. So I've kind of evolved into being a coach, I would say in the last 10 or so years, just taking advantage of my years of experience. I do spend a lot of time in Microsoft and .NET world, although as I've gotten more involved in domain-driven design, that's given me an opportunity to expand. I'm even doing I do a lot of Pluralsight courses, and I happen to be doing one on AWS right now. So that's, nice. You know, like I like to move out and about. I've been really fortunate to have gotten acquainted with and become friends with a lot of people in the Agile community. And that's really how I got to be exposed to mob programming. And I've been at some of the Agile Alliance conferences and some others. And so it's just been wonderful for me to have all these different tools that I can bring to the table and bring to my clients when I'm helping them.
Fantastic. I know that you've focused on the legacy refactoring and things along those lines. And then you and I talked a little bit about mobbing on refactoring legacy code. Can you maybe give us a story about that and what that was like?
Sure. So I don't intentionally focus on legacy. That's just people come to me when they're either, you know, getting started or sometimes damage control or, you know, for advice and coaching and confusion. The first time I really took advantage of mob programming was a client who had, they were replacing a legacy application, but they had started the replacement 2 years before they called me. So they hadn't even released it yet, and it was already legacy. And they were also, it was a company where there was really no software quality practices. There were after I left. Everybody was doing their own thing. Nobody was sharing ideas. I'm sure you've seen some of the like the joke O'Reilly book covers. Yeah. And the Stack Overflow one, copy and paste. Yeah. So that was a lot of what was going on there. And so they had brought me in for specifically to help with Entity Framework, which is Microsoft's ORM. But, you know, once I saw the code base, I was like, let's, you know, back up here. So I spent some time doing, you know, taking a look at what they were working with and talking to them about more modern practices and things that they could do. And on the third day that I was there, we spent the entire day with one group of people. I think it was like the lead architects from across some of the different projects. And I wanted them to have a feeling, an understanding, and some experience of going through this process of refactoring and taking, you know, bringing some of the new elements and new, not just new practices, but new APIs, because they were using really old APIs and things like that. And I wanted to do that with them in a way that it was safe, right? I was there. I knew what was going to break, right? I always explain to people, especially with legacy stuff, what you end up doing a lot is, you know, you have to break stuff. And I say it's kind of like if your kid breaks their arm and you bring them to the doctor and the doctor says, you know, I'm really sorry, but I'm going to have to re-break this so it sets properly. Yeah. Right? So I use that analogy. So there was this there was one person on the team. He was very, very clever programmer, except, and he had coded his way around all these problems. And a lot of the code that he had written was going to be redundant thanks to the new APIs, right? If he had started with the current APIs, which were current when they started, they had been given some really bad guidance. Anyway, so it meant removing a lot of his code, which really was making him not happy. So this was a full 8-hour day of, you know, mobbing. So we were around, you know, around the table, and I was having different people sit. They had never paired, much less mobbed. So, you know, having different people in front of the keyboard and trying to have them have self-control. And throughout the day, you know, so obviously right off the bat, a million errors, right? You know, that it would not compile. And, but I knew exactly what these errors were. I knew what to expect. We would make the changes. And this poor guy, this young man who was on the team, the whole day, he was just getting so mad because I wasn't, in his eyes, improving the software. It was, I was making it worse because it was broken. I was taking out his brilliant code and making it worse, you know, and it kept, you know, like another change and there's more errors or, you know, still errors, et cetera. But we went through it through the day and I, you know, kept everybody engaged and involved, which was challenging, right? Because there are people who naturally kind of take over with, you know, and that's a big challenge when you're guiding mobbing, I think, trying to really, you know, kind of tamper down the people who are always
removing the ego.
Yeah. At the same time watching this young guy, and I swear it was not until like 5 minutes to five, and this was a 9-to-5 kind of place, you know, people who had families and went home to their kids and you know, weren't going to hang out all night. And you know, there was a point during the day where I was starting to go, I know what I'm doing, but this is starting to make me nervous, right? That it, you know, because it wasn't working. And at about 5 to 5, everything just fell into place, right? But the most wonderful thing about that moment was that one young guy who had been so mad because I was removing all of his code and everything breaking, he just suddenly went, oh, he got it, right? He understood the, you know, what we were doing with the code, you know, and the refactoring and encapsulating things and, you know, pulling things apart and all of that. It was so painful for him all day long. But just to have that moment of him, you know, it was working, right? So now they also, I mean, the whole process of the mob programming, my being there was also successful because they understood the process now. They saw that, yes, you're going to have all these problems. And these are the problems you're probably going to have. And these are how you solve those problems. And you just have to work your way through them and it'll be okay. But not only that, but having him get it, like, you know, just this new way of programming instead of just slapping code until it works, just, you know, so that, you know, that was my first mobbing experience. And I hadn't really studied or practiced or been, you know, done anything with Woody, or, you know, it was just more of an instinct. I've heard of mob programming and it was just, I was doing it by instinct. The one thing I knew was to make sure that you keep rotating people in the way that you do with pair programming. So, it was just really, really powerful, but leading people. So I know a lot of times mobbing is used to just help teach and also get people the idea of collaborating. That was another really big thing with this company. Everybody was just working in their cubicles. There was no collaboration. This was the first time they had all coded together. So that was also really interesting. But also they'll, you know, it was specific to guide them through it and be there kind of hand-holding them so that when they when I left and they go did that on their own, it wouldn't be so terrifying or frustrating.
So do you feel like after you had left, the, you know, they began to communicate with each other more at the very least?
They hired a QA person, not a QA person, I'm sorry, a quality practice manager.
Oh, okay.
Like big time, right? Yeah, like they really restructured how they would work after that, right?
And
they
had just with a focus on quality and things along those lines.
Yeah, and you know, I had just gone in there to help them with their object relational management, data access, blah 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 stuff, right?
Sure.
But this happened. You know, that does happen. Like somebody will bring me in to like help with performance issues, and then you know, like that happened once where I was hired for 3 days on site to help with a performance issue, and we knocked the performance issue out on the first day. And they were like, "We're happy to pay you for all 3 days, and you can go home tonight if you want. Fine." And I said, "Well, actually, you know, can we talk about your architecture?" So I got to spend 2 more days there working with them on that, which
nice.
Is great.
Yeah, so that, I mean, I think what your story reminds me of is something I've noticed with mobbing. Maybe I haven't really thought about it before, but it really eases fear, right? So, I mean, I've recently had to go through experiences where, for example, automating something like manual deployment or something like that. And if you haven't done it before for a particular tech stack, it can be really scary because there's so much to learn and so much to do. And there's so many ways it can go wrong, right? So when you're trying on your own, it's easy to feel defeated pretty quickly, right? And so I think having someone in the mob who's done it before, just none of us had done it before, but someone had, and their confidence like just kind of made everything lighter, you know what I mean? And there were still parts of a stressful where we're still not sure how it's going to work, but having mobbing with someone who has done it before really just makes it more enjoyable, I think.
And survived it.
And survived it, yeah, and actually got the job done, right? So well, thank you for sharing that story, yeah.
That's interesting because that also aligns with the domain-driven design side of things. So domain-driven design, I'm assuming you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, I mean, so our audience might not have, so
you
could go into a little explanation.
For me, big focus, the biggest piece of domain-driven design is taking big, scary, complicated problems and breaking them down into small, solvable problems, right? And there's a whole part of it is very strategic, and then there's a whole part of it that's very tactical, like, you know, the architecture and designing. Strategic is much bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I do when I'm working with clients and we're dealing with, you know, looking at the big ball of mud, right? And looking at the existing problem domain, because again, you know, it's legacy software. So whether they're refactoring or they're ready to just start anew, you know, looking at the whole big thing and trying to understand how to pull it apart, where the dividing lines are, where the boundaries are, which is a big thing also, part of DDD, the bounded context. And I talk about this in conference talks as well. I spend a lot of time just telling people, it's okay, calming people down, right? And quieting their fears, right? Especially when you're trying to pull things apart. Everything's related, everything's connected, right? So it's really hard, and you start thinking about that, right? And like, yeah, but if we're doing this, what about this? What about that? What about that? And you know, I'm like, it's okay. Let's just, you know, just forget about those things right now. Let's focus on this. We can solve this. And I promise you, we have ways of connecting them later, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that, right? What you were saying, Austin, about you know, having somebody there that can allay those fears when you know, the stress kind of builds up, right? Whether you're mobbing or doing something else, but certainly in the mobbing, I think that I agree that that's really helpful.
So you have had teams learning domain-driven design while mobbing. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. This was a damage control particular experience where the architect had done architect and one other person had done all the strategic design on their own and then brought it to the developers and said, okay, you got to implement all of this now. Right.
And just kind of
slammed all of the DDD terms to them. And there was a, what is that word when everybody on the ship, you know, they like kill the captain and throw him overboard.
Mutiny.
I mean, they got to the point where they were saying, we don't want to hear anything about DDD anymore. We just don't. And so the architect, who has become a friend, he and I actually have proposed a talk about this to conferences. So I'm not like dissing him or anything. So he brought me there for a week. It was nice. Switzerland, you know, it's very nice. he brought me there for a week and I spent, I think, the first day and a half listening to people argue, right? And that I wanted to hear what the problems were. And he showed me how he had presented domain-driven design to them. Like he showed me the presentation he gave to them and I went, oh my God, no wonder. Oh my God. Right. He was just excited about it. Right. He was very excited and he was just, you know, showing it to them. So I kind of went back and forth with doing high level explaining domain-driven design to them, but also, you know, we talked about the tactical stuff, and in order to help them understand the tactical, I did a combination of, you know, kind of slides, et cetera, but we were always focused, slides and whiteboard first, we were always focused on their domain and their code. And so once I had given them the basic ideas, and I was working with two different Scrum teams who had never worked together before, brought both teams into the room, and we did mob programming. What we did it with was we took some existing code, an existing project, you know, that was a small piece of the big thing, and said, all right, what would this look like? We had started a little bit on the whiteboard. What would this look like if we started applying these tactical ideas, aggregate routes, and that, you know, what here would be maybe a good candidate for a value object. And we started just changing the code and seeing what it would look like. And doing definitely there, we were using, what is the tool I learned in something Woody was doing. It's the software tool that says, okay, time to change.
Oh, yeah, the mobbing timer, yeah.
Yeah, oh God, that was fun, right? So it really enforced, you know, so I had better understanding of how to use the mob programming, and, you know, this time than that other time that was many years before.
Yeah.
So we were using mob programming there to give them the experience of questioning their code and questioning how things fit together and how to design the classes and trying this and trying that. Right. And then talking about it more and then see what, you know, try it and see what happens, see what it feels like, see if it flows, like it feels right. Right. And then just like trying different things. So it, again, you know, a combination of talking, giving them kind of high level training, right? Like the generic, you know, what are these things, but then taking that and applying it first a mental model of how those things applied to their problem, and then literally applying it to their code. And doing that is where I was able to really benefit from, or they were, from the mob programming. And then the other part of that was that collaboration, right? Because they had never worked together before and they had never seen each other's problems before. They had, you know, under their code connects, right? But this Scrum team didn't maybe really understand why the code was designed the way it was by the other Scrum team. And bringing them together just makes everybody more powerful and more able to do their job. So they don't collaborate all the time, but they did decide after that that they would get together, bring those teams together, you know, like once a week or whatever, to do some mob programming, whether it was on their actual code or, you know, doing, you know, just taking one of Emily Bosch's
Katas.
Just doing something, yeah. Right? Because it's all about thinking and collaborating and working together. So it's just practice.
Yeah, it's inherently social as well, right? And so sometimes it's a good change from just working by yourself all day, every day for those that don't do that.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
That was fun.
What would you say, what do you think was made easier by mobbing in some of these tactical practices that you were talking about?
Well, I think similar to that other client, they had the safety net of me being there, right? Kind of that first time. But also they were having conversations about, you know, I think they were all helping each other learn the DDD stuff more deeply and kind of turning the ideas over, or, you know, whether it's the concepts and how those concepts applied to their code, their classes, and how the classes interacted with each other, or the other way around, right? How when something just like, oh, it makes more sense to have it this way, and then being able to take it back, but doing it together is what made it work.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I think, doing it on your own and then going to a stand up and explaining it to somebody.
It feels academic maybe until you've done it once or twice. And then afterwards, when you've had enough confidence to do it together, then the academia aspect of it goes away because you've all done it together and now you understand it coming away from it. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
That's an interesting look at it, because this group of developers, they're so smart. Yeah. And that academic thinking,
yeah.
You know, really, and the other amazing thing was they really understood what was happening with respect to the whole domain-driven design piece of this and how it was getting them to stop and question how things go together and the impact that has.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I have a similar experience in my journey. Domain-driven design and design patterns and refactoring was in the academic category of my mind for, I think, a big part of my career, and it didn't really turn into practice. So I'd like read a book on it, hear a podcast on it, and that was kind of the end. But until I did a lab that was pairing and mobbing with it, and I saw it, because it was always too scary to bring it to real code. I
totally get that.
Yeah, or at least it felt like too big of a leap. But as soon as I was able to do it with someone and see it, the transformation, even in a small one or a big one, the light bulb clicked in my mind, and then ever since it's been there. So that's one thing I think that pairing and mobbing has helped for me. Another thing that came out that I saw, and I wonder, I was interested in your experiences too, was I felt before my coaching style, before it was more pairing and mobbing focused, felt a little conflict heavy in the negative sense, where it kind of felt like I know a better way, I'll code review your code, and then it always felt defensive and argumentative, right? And then when it was pairing or mobbing, it was much more of like, you know, we're all trying each other's ideas, and it'd be like, hey, can we try this idea out? And then we'd try it out, and they'd be like, oh, okay, I see the benefit of that now. And it, where I think if it was just a dialogue in the hallway or a code review, it would have been, I already wrote the code, so I'm going to fight this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, like that young guy whose code I was deleting left and right. Yeah. And that was hard. And it was, I thought it was an amazing thing for him to, you know, to get to a point where he saw the beauty of it and he accepted it and he didn't take it personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Like, and it's okay. It's like, there's no, especially, you know, in a lot of scenarios, the, hey, there's no bad ideas. Let's try it. We've, you know, a lot of times teams aren't given the freedom and flexibility and time to do that, to try things out and make mistakes.
Oh, you know, so the lack of psychological safety too is probably like, oh, well, it's not okay that my code's being deleted because, you know, that means that either my work wasn't good or something along those lines. And so it takes a lot of courage to come out and say, you know what, this is a better way to go, and I'm just going to go with it. And because, you know, I didn't know it before, but that's kind of like the, you know, whole idea behind the retrospective prime directive. Like, everybody did the best they could with the tools that they had at the time. Right. Same sort of thing. It's, you know, so that's the whole thing is, like, whenever I see a large portion of code I wrote in the past get deleted, I'm like, yes, that's fantastic. Let's, you know, but having that attitude is, it also can be very hard for people. So it is a good story.
I'm going to go.
Yeah. And then having that happen in front of everybody else.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, and just understanding, but if, you know, everybody's going through it together. Right. And nobody says, no, we're not going to try your idea. You know, again, it's so much of that is people need to be given the freedom and the time to do that. And leads need to understand that it isn't a waste of time because there's so many benefits that come out of it. And it ends up being very productive.
So maybe you can help educate me here a little bit. So I'm definitely not an expert in domain-driven design. I've done some reading, done some, you know, podcast listening, and done some experimentation. And I guess for me, what you're talking about, driving home the collaboration message of DDD. Do you mind going into that a little bit more?
That's a newer
concept for me. Yeah,
that's really, really a huge part of it. As a matter of fact, it's what really drew me in originally, because I'd heard of the first, I think that it might've been the first time it really registered with me, like the book was, Jimmy Nielsen was getting interviewed and somebody said at the end, oh, we always ask, what's your favorite book? And he said, Domain Driven Design by Eric Evans. It reads like poetry. And I was like, I was writing my first tech book. I was like, ooh, what does that mean? What does it mean to read like poetry? So I picked it up, and the very first thing he's talking about in the book is about the collaboration with, you know, like, as a lot of times programmers will just go, oh, I understand your business, I'll just write the software and get back to you, right? But so the overall thing is the collaboration between the technical people and the business owners, the domain experts, that you're collaborating all the way through, not, you know, not just for one day, but for a very good way through. So, you know, I just extend it to like, hey, it's about collaboration, right? And we've got this collaboration, but then we've got this other collaboration, bring these two Scrum teams together. And that's a different kind of collaboration. But for domain-driven design, it's about the collaboration between the domain experts and, you know, the technical people, and how they can learn from each other, right? Because, you know, when there's important information all the way through. Another really key thing is to continuously be focused on the language of the domain, not the language of the tech, right? And that actually, so that means through the conversations and then even into the code. So a domain, a person who's not a programmer, who's one of the domain experts, could look at the code, maybe not read it all, but have a look at the code and still have an understanding of it because the terms are still there. Like the class names and the, you know, the behaviors and things like that, the way they're described. So that's really, you know, very, very high level.
No, that clarifies a lot for me. Thank you. And I think you're right, because for domain-driven design to really happen, you can't, you know, pull out the domain out of thin air, right? You need to be collaborating with someone who knows it so you can put that into the code, right? And so, yeah, you're right. And so I think that kind of ties into, you know, if you're doing mob programming, but you're not close with the customer, as the you know, extreme programming and the Agile Manifesto talks about, you'll have benefits, but it's unlikely you'll have a good domain, right? So what are things you've seen that have helped teams be close enough to the domain experts to get it into the code?
Well, first of all, you know, that's a good place to talk about or just bring up again this idea that there's strategic design and there's tactical design. So mm-hmm. there's a point at which, you know, the coder's got a code. The coders have to write the code, right? And then, you know, maybe a domain expert might be there if they still have some questions or whatever, but hopefully by then, you know, they know what they're going to be doing. So one, there's two things I want to bring up in response to your question. One is there's an amazing practice called event storming. You've probably heard of it by now. And that's when you bring everybody together, or at least representatives from those different areas across the board, right? The stakeholders. So you've got some technical people. And I always say, you know, bring somebody from customer service, mm-hmm. right? Right. They're hearing ideas maybe, you know, other people would never know about. Bring somebody from sales, right? Bring people from different silos. I've been done event storming workshops where, you know, people are in the same room that have never met before. They're all working on the same software and they've never met before. And they're having these conversations like, wait, you mean because I did this, when you further along in the process, when you're doing this, you have a problem because I did this over here and it's like, oh my gosh, but I could change how I do that so easily.
Yeah.
Like, we never talked about that before. That's one thing. And the other is there's been a lot of conversations in the last few years coming up in, it's really coming out of the domain-driven design community and the Agile community about socio-technical aspect of software development, mm-hmm. right? And it all goes together, right? How the you know, all the social aspect of it, and you're saying that too. And there are people doing a lot of interesting talks about that. And that bubbles up in the, oh my gosh, I talk about this book all the time. The DevOps study, the big DevOps study that Nicole and you know, right?
I was at an Agile conference
and it was, I actually had three slides with it on there. Yeah. And like every single session, somebody was, you know, Jez Humble was there, yeah. Nicole Ferguson, Jez and three people. Like Nicole's like the PhD researcher person. Anyway, so it comes up in there too, like how important all of that is. Nick Toon's talking a lot about it. Michael Feathers, right? Like legacy programming, right? They're all a lot of, they're it's the big new topic that a lot of people are talking about.
Does it accelerate?
Thank you. Yes. I could have Googled it. Yes. Accelerate. And they've actually did, they created another iteration of the study and published it last year. But yeah, it was just, you know, I told you before we started, I'm going to have brain farts.
Okay. We can always add the book notes in the, yes. In the show.
And the third person, it's just, I interact with Nicole a lot on Twitter. I've met Jez Humble, so their names are always like right there.
Yeah.
There's three people equally involved in that.
We'll keep in the show notes. It's not a problem.
Thank you. Okay.
Nice. Yeah. I think I've, what you're talking about, the more you interact with the stakeholders of all different sorts, even the internal and external, it makes it much more natural when in my mob programming experience to say, hey, we just had that call with the customer and he was calling it X. You know, let's rename this class to be X because that reads how, you know, they would see it, right? So the high level policy reads that way. Obviously, we get to the low level details on sending these parameters to a cloud function or whatever, they're not going to understand. But I think I've seen the light bulb go off the more people in the mob are interacting with the domain experts, right?
Yeah.
I think I've definitely seen what you're talking about for sure.
So I'll give you a little nugget about that. There's a term in domain driven design called ubiquitous language. Mm-hmm. So when you're having broken up the problem into smaller problems, and then the smaller problems are referred to as bounded contexts. There's a lot about that. But when you just focused on one problem, we have like almost a terminology dictionary that is specific to that bounded context. So whenever you're talking about that, everybody's using the same terminology at whatever level of conversation you have, whether you're, you know, strategic or down in the code, and nobody has to go, wait, what do you mean? Oh, it's that, right? Right. You don't have to keep translating, right? So mm-hmm. when we're talking about this problem, everybody knows what the words are, what the terms are. So it's referred to as the ubiquitous language. Just it's ubiquitous throughout anything you're doing with in reference to that boundary, that bounded context.
Yeah, it's that's the funny thing. Like one thing that when I first heard about domain-driven design, one thing I really liked was this idea of organizing your projects in such a way that it's not obsessed with the technical implementation, it's obsessed with the domain, right? And then that ubiquitous language comes through all the way through from the beginning to the end. And what's interesting about it too is I think when I've been mobbing with people that are kind of ignorant of the domain, what's been really nice is, you know, oh, why is this thing named this way? It's like, well, it relates to the domain rather than having to answer, oh, well, it's some Angular requirement or something, right? And so that has been super positive when I've experienced those types of things.
Yeah, it is always amazing to just be, you know, like I've kind of instrumented getting all those people into the room, but once they're in the room, even though I'm facilitating, I'm still watching and just reveling in what's happening between the people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're kind of coming to our time box. And so I just wanted to ask, is there anything that you'd like to, you know, kind of plug or promote related to things that we've been talking about here? I heard that you had said that you were doing a course earlier and things along those lines. So
I think sure. Well, I do have a lot of Pluralsight courses, and there's more coming. And there is a domain-driven design course that I did with Steve Smith. It's called Domain-Driven Design Fundamentals, mm-hmm. and we've had amazing feedback on that course over the years. We're planning to and quite committed to redoing the course, just doing a, you know, updating it this summer, but you know, it's still relevant. Yeah, so I have a lot of courses on Microsoft's Entity Framework, ORM. Mm-hmm. So people kind of laugh when they see, you know, I do all this stuff on domain-driven design, but I also do this stuff on data persistence, because one of the big things with domain-driven design is like, forget about how the data is getting persisted, right? Like, just that's a completely separate problem, right? So I actually spend a lot of time researching and sharing with people kind of, you know, when it is time to persist, you know. Anyway, so I have a lot of courses on that. What else? Well, I would normally be saying, oh, well, I'm going to be at this conference and that conference, and you can see me, it'd be great to meet you, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I'm just here in Vermont.
That's fantastic. Well, you know, it's been interesting because I've been attending a lot of virtual events lately, and they've been pretty fun. It's a little bit different than having the travel and seeing each other in person, but
yeah. But the reach is amazing. Yeah. DockerCon was online. I did a pre-recorded session. During the session, I was able to interact with people while it was played.
Nice.
I was interacting with people online. Then I did two live things, but there were 70,000 people that attended, registered, and many of them actually attended throughout the day. I'm not saying in my talk, but so that was pretty amazing also. Yeah. So it is amazing what they're able to achieve with that, but
yeah, it's just different, right? But we are kind of still able to learn and progress as a community. And
yeah.
I found that, refreshing in light of, you know, things that are happening. But
so how are people mobbing?
Yeah, really? You know, it's very interesting. So, you know, we mob full time. We have 7 teams that are doing that. And we were initially, I think it was kind of like, oh, like, what are we, you know, is this going to go horribly or not? But it turned out that I think it actually became more comfortable because everybody had a more standardized experience. So there were some people that you know, maybe the words on the screen were too small or too big, or their monitor was in a different position than they liked, and things along those lines. And mobbing in person, you had no control over that. And so what we kind of gradually discovered was that as people customized their own environments and as people continued to, you know, we had kind of a shared server out there that everybody connected to do their work on. We found that mobbing remotely feels better than mobbing in person, actually.
That's really interesting.
For a large majority of people. And so I think another piece of it is that people are kind of maybe starved for social interaction, and mobbing is a great way to get that while working. And so...
Right, instead of just standing there on a Zoom call, nothing personal, yeah. This is different.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, also even just programming by yourself, I've heard a lot of developers tell me now, I started mobbing because I was lonely. And and so, you know, I've heard that at least 2 or 3 times now. And so I actually think that the current situation has made mob programming take off rather than do the opposite of what I originally thought was going to happen. Was it was possible that it would die off because no one felt comfortable.
Wow. Are there other tools besides Live Share, like, you know, Visual Studio Live Share and VS Code? That, like,
yeah.
Right there, like, oh yeah, that makes mobbing pretty easy and everything in the environment. But are there other tools like that?
Yeah, so I think we talked about tools on another episode of the show, but
yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll have to go find it.
We had one that we use right now is AnyDesk, and so that's just sharing a single computer. And another one that I've been researching a little bit, but I haven't tried out yet, is Amazon's environment, Cloud9, and the ability to have multiple people connect into the same machine over a browser and deploy to Amazon infrastructure. So,
well, there's a good plug for that episode.
yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of them out there, and I keep looking for new ones. And so what I'm really looking for is kind of that the ideal environment where, you know, we don't have to be remoting into a server, but we are kind of connected either through a browser or something and seeing each other's updates in real time.
Well, Live Share.
Yeah. And Live Share, Live Share. And I've tried it a couple times, but maybe no more than like 3 or 4 people, but I'd be interested to hear experiences with that as well. So, yeah. Have you used Live Share for mobbing at all?
Not for mobbing, but I've used it for pairing.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic.
Right. But it does allow. I don't know what the limitation is. So there's another idea for a show for you. You know, have well, I'm sure the Live Share, somebody from the Live Share team would be thrilled to talk about that with respect to mob programming.
We would love to be connected with them.
Or just do it.
Yeah.
That would be the episode. Let's just do it. Like kind of a Twitch thing, right?
Yeah. That sounds great. Well, okay. So I do have to close this off here, but to our audience, please like and subscribe. If you feel like this episode would be helpful, maybe people are experiencing or struggling with domain aspects of their environment, then please share it with them. And until next time, we will see you all later. Bye.
Bye.